I say to people that this is not unique to the U.S., right? The difference in the U.S. is based a lot of times on skin color. In Nigeria and most other countries, it's based on culture.
Well, amazing guests make amazing programs. And today I have one of the most amazing guests that I could even think to have on the show. And I am thrilled to welcome Emil Ekiyor, who is the National Executive Director for the GEO Foundation, and also the founder, I believe, of InnoPower Indy, if I'm correct, Emil. What an honor to have you. So how are you? Good to see you.
I am well. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I've been looking forward to this interview for like 3 weeks, ever since we kind of scheduled it. So you and I had some preliminary conversations, and I thought, man, this guy is just fascinating. So
yes, your work is fascinating. So really intrigued and really just enjoy talking to you about what you do and how much it's needed today in our communities, our societies, our workplace. So really excited to be on your show.
Well, I appreciate that, man. So Culture Matters is really a conversation. We're just talking about you, your culture, your cultural transitions, things you've learned. And so you're from Nigeria originally.
Yes, I am. I was born in Lagos, Nigeria.
So Lagos, I don't know if a lot of people know this, is the most populated city in Africa. Is that correct?
Yes, and one of the most populated in the world, obviously, yes.
Is it Lagos or Lagos? How do you pronounce it?
Well, it depends. If you're Portuguese, you say Lagos. If you're Nigerian, you say Lagos.
Okay, so we're going to say Lagos because it's your country, it's your culture. Yes. So in Spanish, Lagos means lake. So, you know.
Yes, in Portuguese, it's the city of lakes, so yes.
Is that right? And is that literally the case? Is it actually a city of lakes? It is.
City of lakes, a lot of waterways, ocean, everything.
Okay.
Beautiful place.
Well, I need to visit because I've become enamored with Nigeria. I didn't know much about it, and then I started reading about it, and some in preparation for this, but some previously. I didn't know, for example, that Nigeria has like the 20th economic power in the world. Like, I didn't know that.
Yes, and part of the mystery of us, I say sometimes, is that for the largest population of blacks in the world, which is Nigeria, the third largest English-speaking population in the world, which is Nigeria, we are pretty much a unique group of people. I don't think there's any other place like Nigeria in the world. Just the diversity of the country, the unique history of the country, unbelievable place.
It's amazing. So nearly 200 million people, right?
If you're counting everybody right, yes.
Well, those who want to be counted, let's say.
And
so the religious makeup is what, Emil?
So majority of the population in Nigeria is Muslim. In the northern part of Nigeria, in the desert area of Nigeria, way back in our history, the Fulanis and the Hausas, which were nomads, migrated to that region of the country. So the jihad spread there way back in the Muslim jihad days. And so majority of the country is Muslim. The western part of the country by the ocean where the colonizers came in is mainly Christian. And then the other parts of the country that have the traditional beliefs that have been part of our history and culture forever. So I think we kind of break it up into majority Muslim, then we have Christians, and then everybody else pretty much has their different traditional beliefs. So I'm from the Ijaw tribe, which is I-J-A-W.
Okay.
Our tribe is the oldest tribe or oldest group of people in Nigeria. We settled in that land before anybody else. We actually are from the Delta area, which most of the oil in the country, all of the oil in the country is located in that area where we're from. We were pretty much one of the first people to engage the British when the British came into Nigeria. Really rich history of the Ijaw people in Africa and really our contribution to the world today with oil and everything we do. Nigeria is also the fifth largest producer of oil in the world.
Okay, interesting. So there's a good deal of wealth in Nigeria then as well.
Limited wealth, but yes.
I think we all have limited.
Yes, we do. We all have 1%, yes.
So, my gosh, we could take 30 minutes just talking about Nigeria here, but I want to get into a little bit about, so you played professional football, right?
Yes, I did. I played professional football, played with the Tampa Bay Bucks, Atlanta Falcons, and Oakland Raiders, yes.
Okay, so I spent some years in Atlanta, so we're going to go with that one. So.
Okay.
And you also went to college at University of Central Florida, right?
Yes, I went to the Golden Knights, University of Central Florida. Right.
And they're good now. Were they good when you were there? Or?
We built everything. You know, that school was built on my back.
Oh, is that right?
Back when we only had 15 to 20,000 people coming to games, if that, we didn't have a stadium on campus. Population of the school wasn't as large as what it is. But that wasn't that long ago. I like to believe.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't know this, but UCF, to my understanding, and I don't know what if this is recent data, I think it's like the fifth, by student population, it's like the fifth largest university in the country. Is that right?
Yes. And some people have us in the top three. So, yes. The population of the school in the central Florida population has just exploded.
Yeah, a lot of Puerto Ricans, Emil.
Yeah, a lot of Puerto Ricans. Beautiful people, great food, wonderful spirit. You know,
you're speaking to my heart, right? You know,
I love the food, man. I miss it so much. And people tend to forget, right? Puerto Rican food is different from Cuban food, is different from Mexican food, and the whole nine. And
so no one thought we were going to have Emil on, and he's going to give us a lesson on Latino food differences.
Hey, I eat my fair share of plantains. I eat plantains for breakfast.
Oh, my.
But you know what's so funny, though, is that Puerto Rican food and culture is so similar to African culture and food. You know, in Africa, we eat plantains with everything. We love rice. We love spicy foods. And really just the jubilant nature of our people are just so similar that we would look really deep. It would be amazing to see how those cultures like crossed at some point.
My goodness. Maybe that's the draw for me, Emil, because you know I'm Puerto Rican background, right?
Yes.
And maybe that's the draw, right? Is that Afro-Caribbean flavor, right?
Yes.
It's in our music, it's in our food, it's in our soul, right?
Yes.
And plus, you know that I spent a lot of time in the Dominican Republic, so there's a lot of similarities, right? So you and I need to get together and we need to plan a Caribbean, some sort of leadership something, right? With that flair, right? We'll figure that out.
We'll figure it out after hurricane season. We'll get together.
So tell me a little bit about Nigerian food and music.
I mean, Nigerian food. So the thing about Nigeria is that prior to colonization, there was no Nigeria, obviously.
Okay.
Just a group of tribes and people who, cultures, who existed in that piece of land called Nigeria today. So every tribe or every ethnic group has its different flavor, if you say, as far as names, food. So if you were to say a name, I could tell you where that person is from, you know.
Really?
If you were to say certain kind of foods and what the dishes they eat, I could tell you where you're from based on those things. So Nigeria is just so diverse. One in three people speak different languages. Everybody you run into speaks a different languages from different culture. So it's just a unique place in the world. Very, very unique to how diverse it is as a country today. But it's a country that only was established. We got our independence in 1960. In fact, our Independence Day is coming up October 1st.
Oh, cool.
So very, very young, and we're still trying to figure it out. We're still trying to figure out how do we coexist and respect each other's cultures and beliefs and come together as one country called Nigeria. And that's a tough thing.
Yeah, it's interesting because as you're speaking, like so many things are going through my mind, like questions I want to ask you, right? Mm-hmm. So it a lot of times it feels like sometimes talking with people in the United States, it's like they think that America is like the only diverse place in the world, you know?
Yeah.
And that diversity tends to be around ethnicities, right? And a lot of it in the U.S. is color-based. But describe the diversity in Nigeria. Is it like people of different, is it tribal diversity? Is it racial diversity? Is it language diversity? I know some religious diversity.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe the diversity in Nigeria?
I'll say cultural diversity, language diversity, religious diversity. So growing up, right, I learned several cultures within our country and how they believe the world was created. So The Yorubas believe the world is established in a totally different way than the Igbos and the Ijaws. And so all of the different beliefs that have been around for thousands of years. So I tell people all the time when they talk about the diversity of the U.S. compared to the diversity of Nigeria, I say everybody came to the U.S., right? In Nigeria, those people can trace their ancestry back thousands of years. So it is so hard to get someone to buy into somebody else's belief or accept somebody else's way of life or thinking because they've had their own beliefs for so long. So those are things that we learn from each other so much. That's why it makes the country so unique, because we learn each other's cultures and we learn so much about each other growing up. And in a lot of ways, our younger generation, my generation of Nigerians, really were the first generation to live together and go to school together and learn together, right? Prior to that, prior to independence, we were still trying to understand what was the country going to look like and how do we work with each other, educate each other in the same way. And I say it's still a process till today. We're still trying to figure out how do we do this.
Would you say that the cultures, because of what you just described, would you say that the cultures are more embedded perhaps than they are in the United States? I mean, there's multiple cultures in the United States, but it's a relatively young country. But as you said, everybody came to the United States, right?
Yes.
Some way, right?
Yes.
But in Nigeria, they were there. You say that those cultures are even more embedded, that it's even more difficult to penetrate?
Yes.
Get people who are different from each other, which just is what diversity means, right? To actually collaborate together.
Yes. And that's why when I look at some of the cultural issues here in the States, I say to people that this is not unique to the U.S., right? The difference in the U.S. is based a lot of times on skin color. In Nigeria and most other countries, it's based on culture because I am Ijo and I become president now. My cabinet is full of Ijo. Everybody that rules me is full of Ijo because those are my people. And those I hate to use the word tribalism or those kind of things, but those connections are saying, I'm in power or I own a company or in my compound or my family, I'm just around the people who speak the language I speak because our culture just demands that you take care of your own. And it's so hard to disrupt because it's like you said, it's so embedded in who we are as a people. As we grow as one country, we are slowly getting used to being one country and overlooking some of those things and learning to work together and coexist together.
It's fascinating. It's one of the things that I write about and I teach about is we really in the United States need to have more conversations about culture and less conversations about racial differences because our divides are really more cultural in nature than they are based on our skin color. But the conversation is so much around racism that we really, I don't think, get to the root issue, which are the cultural differences that we have. It's fascinating to me to talk with you. And I think it's great for our listeners to hear that diversity exists in other places, but diversity exists around culture, language, beliefs, which religion is kind of a belief system, right? The symbols of these things. And so we talk about culture being the beliefs and the values and the norms and the symbols and the language of a people or a group of people, right? It's not the color of their skin. It's the beliefs, values, norms, and symbols and language that create that culture. And I always think, I don't know how you think about this, but I'd certainly like, I think if we're making these about these, all these conversations that maybe we need to be having about culture, how do we become endeared to one another culturally?
Exactly.
You know?
You're so right. And the thing is, I think of this all the time is, I think the greatest story in world history is the story of Africans. If you look back and say, I just read an article the other day as far as, the first ship that sailed from Africa with slaves happened 400 years ago, right? To the date last week. And you look at how that disrupted the continent. You look at how so many different people were brought to the U.S. from so many different cultures from across Africa. They lost their culture. Along the way, they lost their understanding of who they are, where they came from, the history of themselves. They came to the U.S., they had to adopt a different culture, a different way of learning, learned a whole different language, went through slavery for hundreds of years, went through Jim Crow laws, civil rights, and 3 years ago, we had a black president, right?
Right.
And I truly believe the ending to that story is the connection between African Americans, which is the most powerful group of Africans in diaspora, right? With over $1 trillion in spending power, huge influence in world culture and everything today, that once the African-American people get connected back with the African culture to help develop systems of government and technology, and I think that will be such a powerful impact on this world. Could you imagine what the continent would be today if that never happened? Could we even imagine the world today if that never happened? And we can't point to any time in world history that I've read about that something like that happened and the capacity happened there and the way it happened and the way it disrupted a powerful, a rich culture of people. When you go back and read our history and you see how powerful the empires were, the contribution we made to society, and to see where the continent is today with poverty and, you know, exploitation and everything that's happened there.
Right.
And then to look at the African-Americans here in the U.S. and how African-Americans have developed and overcome adversity, and still knowing that there's more to come. But I truly believe the more to come is the connection.
I'm going to ask you a tough question because it's just one that comes to my mind. Yeah. And you and I are friends.
Yeah.
Do you believe that African Americans should do more to help the economic development of Africa? Or do you think that they're doing what they should be doing or doing enough? Or how do you see that interplay right now?
You know what? And it took me such a long time to understand the complexity of the relationship, right? Because there is no relationship.
Okay.
Once Africans left the continent, if you remember, Africa was under, like I said, most countries in Africa didn't get independence till 1960. At the same time, African Americans were going through civil rights.
Yes.
So both entities are just 50 years or so later, still trying to understand their role in the world, right?
Right.
And in the meantime, there's been a disconnect. So when I was growing up in Nigeria, I never learned about African American history and the struggles and everything that happened here. Coming here and learning about it and saying, wow. And then most African Americans I meet don't know about the rich history of Africa and the civilizations and the empires. And so the pride about where you came from never really existed. Today, more and more folks are going by genealogy and learning about themselves. People are taking more trips. So those barriers that were put in place, in some cases systematically, to separate, being broken down, and there's more awareness to say, you know what, I came from here, and there's so much to the story of us to learn about. The pride, I think a missing link with African Americans is the pride and understanding of where they came from.
Interesting.
There are no solid roots in place because those things were never taught. You don't learn about African history in high school. You don't learn about African-American history. You learn about slavery, and there's a huge gap. And then you get the civil rights. It's almost as though African-Americans didn't exist.
And if you take the connection even further, I'm not sure if most listeners would know this, but the majority of slave trade went to Brazil, right?
Yes, yes.
You actually took that connection to, you could almost form a triangle between Africa, yes, South America and North America, and somehow pull that all together.
Yes.
What you're saying is it's deep, Emil. You know, it's deep. Now, when you came to the States, when you transitioned to the U.S., was it because of playing football or to go to UCF or?
No, I came to high school. I was 14 when I left my family to come stay with the family here in the U.S. And it was just opportunity, you know, chasing opportunity, chasing education. My family felt like, hey, look, there are more opportunities here in the States. And it was a sacrifice we all made for me to leave my family, brothers and sisters, and come here and really learn. And I remember when my parents told me, I was, of course, disappointed in front of my parents, but when I walked away to my friends, I was like, yes.
Yes.
Go to America, you know? But funny enough, right, I remember getting to Daytona Beach and, you know, obviously, again, being around people that look like you and automatically relating to people that look like you. So most of my African-American friends in high school, I remember calling home and saying, I don't know what's going on, but man, this guys are just not excited about America. You know, this is, you know, they don't see it what I see, you know, but I didn't know. But as I've learned over the years and seeing a lot of what's happened for hundreds of years and the fact that even after civil rights, there was not a lot of healing done. It was just left to heal organically and say, okay, all this will come together. And today, unfortunately, we still see scars. And that's why I love what you do. I love, and I continue to learn about cultural mastery and people understanding this kind of conversations and understanding people. Same thing for Puerto Ricans. And I say, you know, the Spanish heritage and understanding Spain and everything that happened and truly understanding the plight of people to be able to appreciate their cultures, understand why things are the way they are today just didn't happen.
If we don't know who we are, where we came from, it really is difficult, right, to accomplish what we're called to do in Earth, you know? And so Puerto Rico, a lot of people don't know the Dutch ruled Puerto Rico for a while, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you literally have this mix of Africans, right? Black mm-hmm. Africans, you have the Taino Indians, you have the Spaniards, and you have the Dutch. And now, of course, you have the Americans, right?
Yes.
And so I think to kind of face those things and really understand those things, you know, is just a really healthy engagement. So like when you went to the States, when you came to the States the first time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you were around African Americans, not Africans from Nigerians, not Nigerians, yeah. but African Americans.
Yeah.
Was that a bit of a culture shock for you? Was
Oh yes, it was. It was. Because like I said, the African American community per se has been through so much, right? And just this has just been fractured in a lot of places. The common denominator though with people are really the relational side of things, right? I think no matter how long, hundreds of years, 200 years, those things are embedded in people as far as the relationships and how important relationships are. So the one thing with the African-American when I first came was just relationships, that there was a relationship established. The shocking thing was just seeing that the access to opportunity to a community was just so limited and how much so many people didn't understand how limited it was for people to move up the ladder, the social ladder, move up the economic ladder because of systematic barriers that were in place, but still having people that overcome those things and succeed.
You're working to kind of not only break down those barriers, but to build much better bridges, right, to opportunity?
I mean, I think in 2019, with technology, and I tell people this all the time, when I left Nigeria, 20% of the population had landlines. Today, 80% of the population has smartphones. So they skipped the whole evolution of beepers, big phones, all those things went from no landlines to smartphones. And technology has a unique way of just accelerating progress, right? And here in the U.S., and what I see today is that in 2019, we have such a huge opportunity because you can educate. What we're doing today on this Zoom call and podcast, there's so much opportunity to educate people.
Right.
So much opportunity for people to engage and understand each other. And the way the world is today, we can't help it. We have to work together.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's nothing we can do about it, right?
If not, we're just going to be at war, you know?
Exactly.
No one wins, ever.
You have to figure out how to coexist with people. If not, I can't imagine with technology and everything we have today, what would happen if we don't figure this out? Because some days you go on Twitter and you go on Facebook and you see some of these things and conversations and you just cringe, right? That people still don't understand each other today, right? So I truly believe that the timing and the opportunities are here, that really it's not because people are bad people, right? It's just because people just have never been in a space with other people to truly try to understand. We've all just expected to know. We expect that this person knows. And I don't think it's a white thing. I think it's all of them. I think Black people or African-Americans and Africans are just as guilty as Europeans and Caucasians. And I think the timing today, because our world is so small, globalization, I mean, all of these things, that how could you possibly not know about somebody else? And I just think that a message of opportunity is really what we try to spread. And we try to get people to understand that there's so much opportunity in the world today. And you don't have to be wealthy to access that opportunity today.
Yeah.
You don't have to be wealthy to build an app, you know. Right. But you get access to knowledge.
Absolutely.
And that is what I think, for the most part, if you look at recent history, apartheid, and the way people have been kept out of assimilation to society and out of growth is by keeping them from being educated.
You bring up apartheid, so I'd be interested to know the relationship of, I want to be careful how I say this, but let's just stay with Nigeria, because that's where the relationship of Nigeria, say, with South Africa, or especially before Mandela, right?
Yes.
What was the relationship of the rest of Africa, or the viewpoint or the framework of the rest of Africa, with South Africa?
So the one thing about Nigerians that I'm so proud of is we may fight internally, right? Internally, just because of our differences, right? But when Nigeria as a country fought apartheid, we stood up against apartheid. You know, once South Africa became free, and the one thing about Nigerians too, I mean, we trade, we do a lot of commerce. Yeah. We're like the Chinese, we're everywhere. Everywhere you look,
the 20th largest economy in the world.
Yes.
And I don't know if you saw this data or not, but Citibank, and this was back in 2010, Citibank said that from 2010 to 2050, Nigeria would be the highest growth in the world in GDP.
Yes, I've seen that. And think about this, Ricardo, we don't even have we don't have 6 hours of power consistently.
So is there great investment opportunities in Nigeria?
Unbelievable, but there's great corruption in Nigeria as well. So what happens is this, and what has happened to us, and what I talk to a lot of young Nigerians about is this. Once Nigeria got its independence, everything was focused on capitalism and democracy. Now, I'm a capitalist. I'm free market all the way, right?
Okay.
But when you have such a diverse group of people that have been on a piece of land for so long, what we never studied is, say, what is the right form of government for us to allow us to respect our cultures, to work together, to maximize our resources, and make sure that we don't have as much corruption as much as it exists today. We never really had that conversation. Until today, we still are not having that conversation. That's something that we have to look at to say, because there's not a place to point to say, they did this and we can do it. It's so unique that we have an opportunity to really try to figure out what is the best form of government that allows us to respect our cultures. So in Nigeria today, for example, we have every Muslim holiday and every Christian holiday. So there are a lot of days off, right?
But it's like Puerto Rico. When do we go to work?
You know, but it's so complex, right? And I think that's what makes the future so exciting for us, is that the huge resources, our cultural beliefs of respect, tradition, and all those things that exist that are just innate in us, allow us to stay true to our culture, but be able to understand what can we learn if we want Nigeria to stay as one country.
I'm going to have you back, Emil, because you're just fascinating. We'll do a part B on Emil, right?
Hey, I love it, man.
because there's so much here. I mean, my mind's just going like this, and I just want to ask this. You know, mastering culture is a process, right? It doesn't just happen overnight. You talk about, you know, we have this opportunity now to really learn about each other, which is just the first step in that process.
Yes.
Are you, so you're in Indianapolis, and you're doing this empowerment work and leadership development. And
yes.
Amazing things. And for those of you who are listening, just look up Emil, right? So it's Emil Ekiyor. Is that, am I pronouncing your last name?
You did. Yeah, good job.
Okay. By the way, Emil, not only did he play football, but he has a son now who's playing at the University of Alabama under Coach Saban there. So
yes,
you are bringing good football players to America. Maybe start sending some scouts over to Nigeria, right?
Hey, that's a whole nother line.
That's a whole nother discussion, right?
Yes.
I'm just seeing Emil setting himself up as a sports agent for Nigerian. You're going to be like a magnet over there. But so you're involved in Indianapolis, Indiana, and the Midwest pretty heavily now. How do you balance, Emil, and this is my last question for you for this interview. How do you balance your desire to kind of bloom where you're planted and grow where you are, which is Indianapolis area, and really have an impact in your area, which you are, with your Nigerian roots and culture and your desire to see your country prosper? I'm sure you have family members over there. How do you balance that life culturally?
You know, that's such a great question. The common denominator, I think, is poverty, right? And what I've seen is, no matter where you go in the world, poverty is poverty. You know, the way of thinking to get out of poverty, the access to opportunity, the change of mindset. And in a lot of cases, a lot of poverty around the world exists because it benefits so many other people for it to exist, right? And the systemic issues that come with poverty that have been in place for so long, right? A lot of it is getting people to be aware. So here in Indianapolis, for example, Indianapolis ranks in the bottom fifth of the country in upward mobility. There are parts of Indianapolis that if you're born into poverty, they say it's almost impossible to get out of it.
Interesting.
And they give so many different reasons why. But in 2019, in the United States of America, in a city like Indianapolis that is just exploding, how can that be? And what I tell people is not a resource issue. There's so many dollars being pumped into this. It's an awareness and it's an understanding that systems and this country was created also for you. So when immigrants come in, just like I came in, and I'm excited about opportunity in America, because I knew there was opportunity in America. There are people in this country that don't know.
Right.
And it's so amazing to me, right? And a lot of it goes to cultural mastery, how they were educated. Were they empowered in education? The people who are sitting and teaching them, did they understand who they were teaching?
Right.
Or was I just teaching you math and science and that's it? Or was I really trying to empower you with a unique understanding of what you've been through and not feeling sorry for you, but empowering you to overcome those barriers that have been in place? I think those mistakes, and I won't even say mistakes, I think that lack of understanding of what needs to be done, those things that were never put in place after civil rights, right? Those systemic things that should have been put in place to help a group of people overcome the oppression they faced for 100 years. And it's not a dollar thing, it's an empowerment thing. I read the other day about Germany and how after the Holocaust, the German government put so much in place as far as educating Germans to make sure that never happens again, right? To understand the sickness of what happened and to make sure that that would never happen in that country again, right? And not looking at it saying, and a good friend of mine is German, he was saying to me, like, Emil, we don't look at it saying, well, I didn't do it, so don't blame me. You know, and a lot of my American friends, when we have this conversation, they say, well, you know, I understand, but I didn't do it. You know, I had not, but those scars exist.
Sure.
And the way we go about healing and really fixing some of this thing. So, I mean, the funny thing about America is, can you picture this country even being greater?
Oh, the potential is so unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
You know, in Nigeria, right, every time I travel back, it's so funny, right? Nigerians do a lot of business in China. But very few Nigerians say, hey, I can't wait to go to Beijing. Everybody wants to go to New York or Miami.
That's fascinating. That's great. Right?
Everybody till today, because they just know Americans are different people. Americans have a spirit about them that is so different. But once Americans come home, I mean, I've been Americans and I've traveled Americans to Africa, and it's amazing how just the spirit is just unbelievable. Something happens when they come back home, right?
Yeah.
And it's just everybody. When I say Americans, I mean everybody. I don't mean right. just white. I mean right. black, everybody. Is just a reluctance to really get to understand each other. And everybody has a preconceived idea and bias about each other, right? And what I've learned is those things are so false.
They're not only false, they're incredibly superficial.
Yes.
And they're unbelievably limiting, you know? And
yes,
so whatever, I admire you so much, and I admire your work, and whatever I can do to partner with you to help support you and your work.
Oh, you already know you are, Ricardo.
You know, I mean, because
you know I'm going to hold you up to that. So,
we, you know, I mean, culture is mastering culture is a skill, right? It's not just something that you're born with or not. You can be taught this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're one of these guys out here. You're like this living, breathing example of you're just refreshing to me. And
thank
so
you.
I want you to know that. And my guest today has been Emil Ekeyor, who is the executive director of the GEO Foundation, has also founded InnoPower Indy. And you've heard him. And we're going to have you back, Emil. You are amazing. And what you're doing is amazing. I would encourage any of our listeners, if you want to help support Emil's work, look him up on LinkedIn. And I'm sure that he'd be more than receptive to have that conversation with you. So, Emil, thank you so much. You're a blessing to the world, my friend.
You are as well, sir. You are as well.
Take care, brother.
Yes, sir.